none of those people are going to be around any, you know, none of the governments are going to, like, who, what government employee is going to go to work when you work, you know, your month's worth of wages buys you a day's worth of groceries, like that. And that's historically true. Like when hyperinflation hits, then within 4 to 6 months, the government gets toppled. But that also goes back to the European farmers. Like they're like, we have no other choice. We have nothing else we can do. We're going to just stop growing food and we're going to destroy. They stop trains and dump the grain out onto the tracks and they stop trucks and they dump the food out. And they're like, look, we know if people get hungry enough, then that will stop this government. And because this government just screwed me big time, I'm going to, this is the way we can fight that government. So what farmers in Europe are going to be farming or planting this spring, like right now? What percentage? It's a dang good question. I don't think there's going to be many of them.
Well, and then what's going to happen to the people?
In 2023, according to MIT Living Wage Calculator, folks in major cities needed around $68,499 just to make ends meet comfortably. But guess what happened next? In just 1 year, that number shot up a whopping 40% to $96,500. Can you believe how much inflation has affected us? That's the kind of inflation that keeps us up at night. Now, I don't know about you, but I sure can't afford to keep pace with that kind of skyrocketing cost of living. It's downright scary. But you know what's even scarier? Not doing anything about it. That's why I've been talking to folks over at Miles Franklin. They're all about helping regular people like you and me protect our hard-earned savings. With gold and silver, you can lock in the value of your money and shield yourself from the ups and downs of the economy. So if you are like me and want to keep your nest egg safe and sound, reach out to Miles Franklin at info@milesfranklin.com. Just mention my name, Sarah sent me, and they'll take care of you like family, because it's just how we do things here in Middle America. Don't wait until it's too late. Protect your future today.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have the great Marjorie Wildcraft coming to the program. And I just love her. We have a really good conversation about the global food supply, and it really is under attack. You know, I just talked about Massey. In this interview, we talk about how Representative Massey put together a constitutional amendment so we can grow our own food. The fact that that's even something that people are talking about is crazy. But we are, you know, all these farms, we're going to talk about the farms that are being shut down, the things that are going on. And so this is a wartime essential skill. So you can become more self-reliant, growing your own food and knowing, learning how to forage. I usually have a free series for her up on sarahsbackyardfarm.com on learning how to grow your own food. This is something different. This will air on April 26th and 27th. So this will be, if you're seeing this, hopefully you'll see this before it airs. And it's coming up, what, Friday and Saturday of this week. And so you will learn basic foraging skills, basic skills if you the food supply is disrupted. Plus, you'll learn how to grow more nutritious food and how to save a lot of money. I know people are struggling with the cost of food right now, and this is something that can really help you on that front. And so I highly recommend going to sarahsbackyardfarm.com. It's all free. So I love Marjorie. She's giving you a ton of free information. And in this, we're going to talk about the food supply in this interview. We're going to talk about the food supply, how it's under attack. She's going to give specific examples. I talk about some things that are going on in Australia, and she brings up Europe and just kind of the whole deal, what's going on there. And then she talks about, gives us some tips in this show on what you can do to just, she recommends doing a chicken coop. I'm like, what? I don't. So she talks about that and why that could be really helpful. So you're going to learn some things just in this interview. It's really interesting. I hope you stay with it, but go and sign up sarahsbackyardfarm.com. Now let's get into my talk with Marjorie Wildcraft. Hi, Marjorie. Welcome back to the program.
Hey, Sarah. I'm so glad to be back. I have so much fun with you whenever we do a podcast together.
I know.
So
this is great. Well, you have such a deep knowledge in so many topics, but especially with your wartime essentials coming out and all your food, our food supply is under attack, right? I mean, because there's three pillars that they go after to control the population. And you know, money's to control the world, essentially. Energies is what Kissinger said. And it's probably pretty true. And a lot of people said, you control the money, you control the world. You control energy, you control continents. You control food, you control the people.
That is wisdom that has been known, like it used, like if you were to grow up in a royal family, that would be taught to you from day one. Because, the Romans used to say it, give them bread and games and they'll never revolt, right? The only time people are going to revolt is when they don't have enough to eat. And I saw that, was it 2003 or something when the US went into Iraq over that whole crazy, I almost want to say a trumped up charges, but now that we got a Trump, I don't know if that's good to say anymore. But they had these crazy, like, oh, they got nuclear weapons. And everybody knew they didn't have nuclear weapons, that they went in there because they were trying to sell oil in dinar and it would have destroyed the US dollar hegemony, right? So I was like, why aren't Americans out in the street revolting against this? And then I thought, well, what makes people riot anyway? And then, when you have a question, and this is one of the wonderful things about this universe, is when you have a question and you put it out and you say, please help me find the answer to this, what makes people riot? That's what I want to know. And then, sure enough, I'm like randomly on the internet. You know how that is. And I end up on MIT's website. And there was a very well done article on why people riot. And it was done by the Institute for Complex Systems. And they thought, being the Institute for Complex Systems, that the answer would be complex. And it turns out it's actually simple. It's one variable, it's food. And they actually have a mathematical model of when the price of food in this region gets to be this amount, then we are going to see violence. And they totally predicted the Arab Spring. And, I'm sure those kind of calculations are just standard stuff for
I saw,
kings,
I
the
think you're right.
royalty.
Well, I saw a calculation once back in the beginning, 20, about the 2000s, maybe a little sooner or earlier than that. It was out of the UN, and it said that when the top, I don't know, 5%, I can't remember the exact percentages because I'm going off the top of my head. When the top certain percentage, 5% or so, makes a 10 times or 15 times more than the bottom 50%. I don't remember the exact percentage, but there's an actual equation, then revolutions occur. And we are already past that in the United States, but I think they missed the factor, which is the poverty level of that bottom need to be at a certain point too. So if the top percentage is living a high off the hog and whatever, and the bottom percent is still okay, then revolution, I mean, you'll have all the rumblings and sort of revolution. Maybe that's what we're seeing now, but you don't have the violent revolution without the food factor.
It's the food is the thing, and I totally understand that, but it's the food, and really, and the bottom line for me was Joe Sixpack ain't getting off that couch until he's hungry. That's
That's
bottom
right.
line.
Yeah,
That's
you'll
it,
have the activists, but you don't get the average person.
right,
And you don't
yeah,
get the violence, right?
right. And they know this, the global cult that runs this planet, they know this. They have these equations, they have these formulas. In fact, I think you and I have talked about 2015 when Cargill did that scenario called the food chain reaction crisis. And they scenarioed that something would happen in 2020, like maybe a pandemic, something big. And then just over the next decade, there was all this series of crazy accidents or bizarre weather, climate change, or whatever. And the price of food went up at least 400% from baseline, and we're almost completely on schedule with what they had scenarioed out, by the way.
Wow.
Now they did not factor in hyperinflation and currency collapse, which is, I think, going to happen here in the United States within the next before the end of this year for
You
certain.
think it'll happen that soon?
I think so, because there's so much going on globally. You and I can talk. We'll get into that next. But bottom line is, they have scenarioed this out. They are designing a global famine. They've scenarioed it. They talked about it. They know that it's coming. They have all these equations and all this statistics and stuff. In fact, there's a website. Oh, let me think if I can remember the address of it. But it's one that they built to monitor, because they know that global violence against governments, especially, is going to break out in lockstep with the price of food and the lack of food availability. And they actually even have a website where they have some university or something other studying this and mapping out the number of instances of significant violence against or protest against governments, Like it's just one of their websites where they're tracking their own models and everything. So they
It's just
know
a mathematical formula.
for them.
Yeah, for them, I know it's sad. I know, but to them, well, I just published an article that came from the MIT's Living Wage Calculator and from Smart Asset. They created these, they took that data and then created some factors around it. And it's in the last 2 years, since 2022, in big cities, the cost of living to live comfortably, it's gone up 69% in the top
Absolutely.
100 big cities. That's to the point where I mean, the average people can't. And what it said is about 98,000 an individual needs to make to live comfortably. Live comfortably means that you take 20% of your income and pay off your debts and save for retirement. And then there's another percentage so that you can just live comfortably. Like you can actually go to movies and things. You're not just a slave. It's not like you're living off the hog. You just can live like a normal life. And 98,000 now for an individual in a large city on average, and a family of four, you're talking at least in this the big cities, twin cities like Minneapolis, St. Paul, you're talking $260,000 for a family of four to live comfortably. And the average salary is only 57,000 in this country.
That's about right. That's it. We are in the inflationary stages, and we will be hitting the hyperinflationary stage here pretty soon. I mean, we're on that curve as it starts to really ramp up. There are a lot of countries around the world that are dealing with 100% inflation per year, and they're continuing to go up. And
You
this
can't eat.
exactly. And this is intentional. They are designing this global famine. Like you can still see the remnants of the food chain reaction crisis on the internet. They did take the website down, the official big one on in 2020, because
Freak too
that's when
many
it
people out.
started,
Yeah.
right? They just don't want to have that around. But there's still, you can still see. And unfortunately, I wasn't aware of how important these scenarios are at the time. I did know what was going on, and I kind of watched it a little bit. But, I was like, oh, that's interesting. That's weird. That's crazy. Dum da
Yeah.
dum. You
Well, you
know.
didn't
And
know. We were,
now,
yeah. Now it's like, oh, this could
now.
really, yeah.
Oh, they do the cyber polygon? Yeah, I'm gonna. I was listening to Cliff High. I know you're a big fan of his. And his recent one was like, yeah, go buy a bunch of books you want to read, because that grid down thing's gonna happen sometime soon, and you'll have something to do. Oh, I'm like, okay,
He's right, though. I mean, it
he
is.
is
They're
right.
planning it. The intel that we're getting, I just have Dave Hodges on about the fact that that's what they're planning to do the grid, but they're also attacking our institutions and they're reframing, and they're going to use this as how they're going to do it. And NSA is going to take over the internet, by the way. That's coming down the pike. They're voting on it. For sure, it's going to happen at some point here. But they're reframing our whole constitution and saying that democratic institutions, like our institutions are democratic institutions, right? That's what they're saying. And that anybody that speaks bad about one of our democratic institutions is a threat to national security and needs to be shut down. It's like, what? The First Amendment is in place so that you can talk about our government.
Whatever you want.
Yeah, well, but specifically challenging your government, if you can't do that, then you're in trouble, right?
And
Sleep
then
or
the
the sheep
Second
to the
Amendment
slaughter.
is there to also back that up, right?
Yeah. And so the fact that they're saying if you're a threat to our democratic institutions, it's like, wow, this is the exact opposite of what the Constitution is there for. And
Is
so
written
they're
for.
just don't even care anymore. They're just going for it.
Well, we're at war, right? We're at
That's
war. And
right.
people think of the
That's right.
Ukraine and the Russia and the Gaza and the Israel and the Iran. And of course, that is all happening. Actually, when I saw the Israel and Iranian back and forth, and I thought, oh, that's why they call it theater. I guess it's just, I was like, oh my gosh. But they really, so that's not the war. The war is humanity, humans fighting for humanity against these global cultists that control all of these systems, and they are preparing a famine. That's like, it's not preparing, it's in progress. And so we've all seen in Europe, right? And we've seen the things where the farmers are protesting and they spray the the government building with manure, and you're like, yay, right? Well, what we don't realize is that actually there are way more protests than you ever really see in any Western media. And so it started with the Netherlands, and they cr came up with crazy legislation because the global co controls the governments, and they came up with these crazy laws. They changed like the cost of fertilizer and increased it dramatically, or they said, hey, a tire, you have to pay for disposal when you buy it. And basically they made farming completely impossible. And so those farmers had nothing left to do. So they drove their tractors, down into to the main areas. Well, they did the exact same thing in country after country throughout the European Union. They were different laws, different in implementation. They let their legislators get creative with how they wanted to screw their farmers, but basically the entire EU. And so there are protests in Spain, in Italy, in France, in Sweden, the Netherlands, all of it. They're all protesting, and they're huge and they're significant. And you say, wow, that tractor, that guy just drove his tractor right through that barricade and he's chasing police. And you're like, yeah, that's because that guy has just lost his livelihood and what
That's
his
right.
family has done for generations. That's why that guy is doing that. It's not like, oh, let's chase a few police today. It's way
They
more
wrecked their
serious. And
life. Yeah, they wrecked everything. And it's more serious because it's the ripple effect of what that means, right?
the ripple effect is, and so we were watching that and we said, okay, well, is that going to happen? And then sure enough, and this happened, I guess, about a month ago, in Oregon, hundreds of small farms got cease and desist letters that the state of Oregon, again, the legislature, remember, they own all of our government, came up with some laws to protect the groundwater, which the state of Oregon claims it owns. And, basically made it impossible for these small farmers to farm. And, oh, but if you get $100,000 of this equipment because of that, nobody has that, right? Well, there was enough of a public outrage, like by myself and all of us influencers, saying this is ridiculous. Well, they backed down off of that, but I can guarantee you they're going to come up with something else.
For sure.
And so we thought, well, maybe that's just Oregon, because, Oregon.
They are kind of crazy out there, yeah.
They're a little weird, they're like kissing cousins to California, right? It's definitely weird. Well, I'll be danged if they Maine has not condemned. They have condemned 50 farms, and they're going to condemn more. And that was totally entrapment. So every municipality in the United States composts their soil, the solid waste in the sewage system, which, on the surface, it sounds kind of like a good idea. I think it's better than burning it or dumping it in the ocean, which we used to do. The only problem is that compost, even though it's deemed completely safe by the USDA and the FDA, it's loaded with heavy metals,
That's right.
pharmaceuticals, all kinds of chem. You think anything that you think your hospital or your light industry or your Aunt Lily, who didn't want that furniture polish anymore, anything that anybody dumps down the toilet. And so they turned this into compost. And in Maine, they said, hey, would you guys like this? Really, it's really rich in nitrogen, this great organic fertilizer. It's the USDA says it's safe. And so these farmers put it all over their farm. And then now the government goes back. It's entrapment.
Oh,
It says,
now they're
oh, you
saying
have
it's
for.
bad after they sold it to them, and that's why they're shutting them down.
Yeah, they said, no, you got forever chemicals in your soil, and the food you produce is terrible. And so they shut them down, and they're going to shut down more of them. And that is just totally entrapment. It's
So for
totally
sure it is.
entrapment.
For sure it is. They
Yeah,
should be
so.
paying to help them clean up their soil at their cost because they're the ones that did it, and now they're going to destroy these people's lives. It's incredible. Massey, did you see the constitutional amendment that Massey just put forward a
No, I
couple
haven't.
weeks ago?
What's this one?
That we have the right to grow our own food. The fact that you even need a constitutional amendment to grow your own food, but that's what the amendment's about.
Oh my God, I had no idea. Oh, thanks for letting me know that. Honestly, I don't think the political system is, I just don't invest a lot of time or energy. Hyperinflation. None of those people are going to be around anymore. None of the governments are going to, like, who, what government employee is going to go to work when you work, your month's worth of wages buys you a day's worth of groceries, like that. And that's historically true. Like when hyperinflation hits, then within 4 to 6 months, the government gets toppled. But that also goes back to the European farmers. Like they're like, we have no other choice. We have nothing else we can do. We're going to just stop growing food and we're going to destroy. They stop trains and dump the grain out onto the tracks, and they stop trucks and they dump the food out. And they're like, look, we know if people get hungry enough, then that will stop this government. And because this government just screwed me big time, this is the way we can fight that government. So what farmers in Europe are going to be farming or planting this spring, like right now? Percentage? It's a dang good question. I don't think there's going to be many of them.
Well, and then what's Ukraine, going to happen to the people?
Right.
Go ahead. What's Ukraine is the breadbasket there and all the
wars. It's the breadbasket for Europe. Yeah. And now, first of all, they don't have any able-bodied men left over. They've basically sent all of them out to the front. But a lot of their lands are just filled with, you know, rocket shell holes and destruction, and their infrastructure has been so destroyed. And I've seen some estimates. They're saying, well, maybe they'll get out about 5% of what they normally do. It's a huge hit. It's
oh
a huge
my God.
Hit.
How are they going to feed people? You know, Australia, I had some people send me stuff from all over the world, and Australia farmers are struggling. And I was listening to I reposted that little video that they sent me, and the Australian farmer, same thing, the government's putting all these restrictions. And they were saying that at first, the farmers that really kind of had their act together with automation and different things, they were saying, oh, we're just better, you know, and so you guys just are kind of like hillbillies and didn't know how to upgrade your farm. And so they kind of had that attitude. And then they started putting more restrictions, and now like everybody's affected. Even the people who thought they were better are now affected too. And they were talking about how the suicide rate amongst farmers is skyrocketing. And because they're losing...
Suicide.
Yeah, the suicide rate is skyrocketing, and how that's not their fault. And so they have these... They're trying to teach people this isn't their fault, and have these activist groups and how to go after the legislation. I was watching this and I was shocked at just how much these people are struggling.
Oh my gosh. And it's coming here, right? So they use all different kind of ways. Oh my God, that's terrible. That reminds me in India, like there were farmers, there was a spate of farmers that committed suicide like by drinking Roundup, because they were getting pushed out by big corporations like that. But
they were trying to make a point, so they did the mass suicide to prove a point. Oh God,
yeah,
that's
because well, you know, when your livelihood is completely over, what have you got left? You know, it's like the during the Arab Spring, the guy just doused himself with gasoline and lit a match in the square, because what has he got? He ain't got nothing. You know,
no
future, nothing, can't feed it, you know.
When men lose their ability to provide, a lot of men are completely crushed, right? Women are crushed
too,
when you lose your whole livelihood, but I think it hits men harder. And, you know, during the French Revolution, the reason the French Revolution was triggered was because women couldn't feed their babies and their children were dying. And they dropped their fear. They just dropped their fear and said, I don't care anymore. And then that triggered the revolution. It motivated the men to, and all everybody, they just didn't care. The women motivated. But this is a different thing. When you lose your livelihood, I think this is what triggers the men, because it affects them so deeply.
It sure does. You know, I guess as women, we know, you know, like my career got interrupted due to motherhood, and we change our names, and we're a little more flexible. But yeah, men definitely have a lot more they want to be protectors and providers, and when that's completely taken away from them, what do they do? So we're looking at Europe, the EU leaders now. I saw this in Bloomberg. They're war gaming a food crisis in Europe this year. Like they know it's coming. They know it's coming this year. And so the European, you know, the legislators have been given this mandate to go do this from their overlords. And now they're like, oh my God, this is going to happen. How are we going to save our skins, basically?
Well, because the people are going to go after them. right?
Yes, that's right.
They're going to
Absolutely.
Because you didn't do your job protecting us. We're going to show you. We're going to go after you. You know, Cliff High, who I follow, he says, and he just posted this last week, and I don't know, you know, are we at that point? He says that it's going to be essentially a French Revolution here against our political class. And unless they wake up and do something, and he says it's not happening. That's what the emotional index, because what he does is he follow, whether he's right or not, I don't know, but that's what he's saying. He follows the emotional index predictive analysis. It's used by major corporations all over the world. This is not something that isn't, that's just woo-woo stuff, right? They do the same thing for their analysis. And he's been doing that predictive analysis on emotional, how you feel and things. And he says the emotional, these things are off the charts. He's never measured this stuff like this before. And he's saying this is what's coming based on what I'm measuring, that we're going to have some kind of, well, and it's the food, but
well,
also
it makes
the people
sense.
Dying, right? The COVID people dying from.
Oh my God. Yeah. I never thought when I got started into this, and I always knew that backyard food production was important, but I never thought that it would be such a critical component in a global revolution of humans to fight for humanity.
Well, I know. I remember you were back and we were talking about Cuba, you know, how Cuba survived by everybody having a garden on their roof and stuff. That's how they survived. And you told story. That story is almost more relevant now than back then.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
important. It's happening. I mean, the U.S. in some extent, it's kind of last here. You know what I mean? It's kind of like even though it's still, prices are going up and things are getting harder, we're still the kind of the last, because it's way, way worse in the UK and definitely in Australia. God, China, can they do anything? I don't know. You know, Canada's having a rough time. And then, of course, all those third world countries, they're people that normally only can live off of $2 a day. Like, I don't know what they're doing now, because, you know, that the food prices have doubled in those countries. We've got a lot of inflation at 100%. So,
well, what can people do? This is just,
I know, this is so,
it's so
overwhelming.
I know. So
I know, right? I wake up every morning. I know it's not funny. I got to laugh though, because I wake up in the morning and I'm like, wow, am I in this one of these movies or something like that? Like, oh my God, the world is
Zelda
controlled
game.
By a the world is controlled by a global cult that has control of the financial system, the educational system, the governmental systems, the healthcare systems, the food systems and everything. And they're out to kill us. And,
you know, I spoke.
Okay.
I spoke at an event when there was about 10 legislatures here from my state, and they invited me to speak and whatever. And there was about 35 people, more than we thought. Right? I don't think there'd be one legislature that would have showed up to listen to me 5 years ago because I'm too out there. Now they're all like listening, and the world has changed so much.
It really has. So what can you, and I will tell you, so my routine in the morning, you know, I get up and I meditate and I pray, is the number one thing, is to maintain your connection with what your creator, whatever spirituality you have, or however you do that, you know, whatever traditions you follow. And then the next thing I do is I go out into the backyard and I take care of my rabbits and the gardens and the trees, and I greet the sun, and I'm like, wow, it's a beautiful day, and there's birds singing, and my feet are bare on the ground, and I know that I'm taking care of my own food supply and my health, right? Even the way I've designed things. For example, I have a lot of friends who are in their 70s and 80s, and I intentionally do that. Like, I want to know what's coming, you know, what can I do, you know? And almost all of them have knee problems. So now I've found somebody who has some exercises to strengthen your knees, because I don't want to be 70 and having a knee problem. And so I built that into like how I move my rabbit tractors. I use these knee exercises as it's a part of my lifestyle, right? Of keeping my body strong in particular ways. But I'm just so relieved, you know, like, okay, I've got food here. I've got genetics here. I'm like, in tomorrow, I'm going to, I co-host a seed and plant swap party. We used to do it every 2 months. We've now upped that to once a month. And so I've got a lot of friends who are also significant producers here in the community. We hang out together and we trade plants and seeds. And, you know, I'm building community, and those are the things. So when I say that, the home front is so essential. It's just so essential. Those simple things are so essential for your health and for your sanity. And they are very simple things that you can do that are just super empowering. I mean, how can I look at the insanity of the world and still manage to laugh a little bit? It's because I feel pretty secure in my beingness to be able to provide for myself and to be able to be a leader in my community and help other people. And you know, that to me is my grounding and my sanity in the face of this awful situation. I just got to laugh at it sometimes. It just gets more and more weird and bizarre every day. But there is a lot you can do. And yeah, I did put together that. I think we're going to have I'll have the link forwarded for the Sarah's Backyard Farm can go directly to this, but it's called the Wartime Homefront Essential Skills, and it's free. It's a series that we're airing for free, and it covers, you know, backyard food, how to grow half of your own food in your backyard in less than an hour a day. It's actually about a half an hour, and that's what I do every morning. I've been growing half of my own food for almost 2 decades now using this very simple system.
Only a half an hour a day. I mean, it's not really that big of a deal. Yeah. And I, one thing that you say is that you can be fat, out of shape. You can do it from an apartment. You can be old. I mean, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. And I've specifically found ways that people can do this that are older, out of shape. I've taught this to youngsters. I've taught this to elders. I think there's more than a million people now that we've taught this system to. And I personally know firsthand of several tens of thousands of people who have implemented it and are using it regularly. So, I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years. So, you know, I know this works, right?
A long time.
So there's another presentation that Jill Winger is just a wonderful homesteader. And she and I, between the two of us, have 45 years of homesteading experience. And we riff on 9 different ways for food preservation. So drying, freezing, canning, freeze drying. And what we like, what we don't like, what turned out to be a huge waste of time and money, what we do regularly. You know, so this way it'll help you sort through all those different options very, very quickly, because food preservation is a critical skill. And even right now, I tell people, look, you know, definitely buy backup food. And I you know, the pails or the buckets or whatever, you know, for sure. But you can also go to a farmer and say, hey, do you have any excess cases of tomatoes or whatever, and can up your own tomato sauce and have really good quality. You know what it is, and you've learned a skill and created something. There's no reason you can't do that, right?
How much do you think people save? I mean, it's a huge, like, each year your cost of just living is a lot less, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And there is no quality out there that matches what I'm eating, right? Because I'm working with my own soil and adding the nutrients and making sure that's the healthiest and vibrant and most alive soil that I can have. And my animals, I know exactly what they've eaten. And I know the quality of the most important thing that you can eat, the most nutrient dense food that you can produce, is going to be the liver of your own livestock. Liver. Oh my God. I know, I hated it when I was a kid. My mom made us eat liver once a week.
Liver and onions.
Right. I would never eat liver from a commercial food supply. Right. That is just an absolute no-no, but it's a superfood. Like, you're not going to need your supplements if you can have access to eating liver pretty regularly. And there's wonderful, you can make it into a pate or something. I make it tasty, and you know, it doesn't have to, or I take for my kids, I would chop it up and hide it in with ground beef in a stew. And, you know, I mean, there's ways to make it more palatable.
You tricked them? Did they know? Every so often they got a piece of liver and they didn't know.
They did. Yeah. They figured it out. So I would chop it up finer.
They weren't that dumb. Yeah.
They weren't that dumb. And I found if you put more than 10%, they'd know, you know, and then you add a lot of extra chili powder. But yeah.
That's so funny, because kids just uniformly don't like liver. I would eat it with the onions and stuff. I got used to it, but
yeah. I eat it now, and I have trained myself to love it, and I eat it now. But I remember I didn't like it when my mom was totally old school, and She fed it to us all the time. I was growing up, and this is the 60s and the 70s, where I guess there was still a chance of having a somewhat cleaner meal back in those days.
My mom, this is totally not relevant, but my mom used to make me eat lima beans. And as a kid, I hated lima. And I remember I'd sit there and they'd give us, the food. I was, my mom and dad were, traditional too. And if what's ever on your plate, you better eat
Yeah,
it.
you better
And
eat.
we'd sit there for 2 hours. And if our dog was around and they weren't around,
You slip it under
yeah, you got
the
really good at
Yep.
that.
Yep. Totally understand.
Yeah, but so you got to know the one thing about that is when you have your own kids, because you knew all the games you played,
You know all the games.
you know all the games. That's funny.
Or the stuff you tried to hide under your plate. And then
Oh
when you go to wash dishes and you,
yeah.
whoops. Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's so
Oh
funny.
gosh.
We all go through that.
Yeah.
But parents don't make their
Yeah.
kids eat. A lot of now they don't have their kids eating any vegetables. They just give up. That's so bad, isn't it? I mean, just not.
I was shocked when I found out how few people actually cook anymore. I'm like, oh my God, we have to go back
Well,
that far?
yeah, and that is very serious. And I just wish I was better at. I'm one of those that really do need to really clamp down and just say half an hour a day, I got to get my butt out there and do this because it's so important.
Yeah, do it, Sarah. I'll tell you what to start with. And this is going to be counterintuitive, and everybody thinks Marjorie, oh, gardens. And I'm like, actually, gardens, I would recommend you start out with a flock of chickens. I get six laying
Really?
hens.
Because
Yeah.
I thought
And
about that. Okay, keep going.
here I'll tell you why. So, and I do have the designs, and actually it's in the video in the Wartime Homefront series. There's like, here's what the chicken coops looks like. And in the book, my publisher is going to be so proud of me. Yeah, you got to promote your book, right? When you write your book, your publisher will always be telling you, make sure that you promote your book every time. But no, there are drawings in here. And if I haven't gotten you a copy of the book, I'll get you a copy, Siri.
Yeah,
But there are
I'd
some.
love one. Well, because I've been reading that was one of the things I've really wanted to do is have I've even looked into chickens and
Well,
there's a book, but I've
let
read,
me,
go
yeah.
ahead. I was gonna say I
I want to.
read that it's the hardest thing to do, but that you're saying no,
No, no, no,
start
no,
with
no.
this.
Start with chicken. I'll tell you why. So what you do is
Okay.
you either build it. If you've got even a modicum of carpentry experience, you can build it in like 2 weekends. And if you don't, then hire somebody to do that or do a work trade or something, but
Sure.
it doesn't take that long to build a chicken coop with a little run. And then make sure you got your water system set up and make sure you get your feed set up. For now, commercial feed is still relatively inexpensive. Buy feed, right? There are ways to provide 100% of the feed for your chickens by things that you can either grow or figure out. But you've got so much to figure out now. Let that be phase two. Okay. So right now, go buy some, buy a 50-pound bag of chicken feed, set up some water, and build the coop. Then go either out on Craigslist or go to a local feed store, and you want six laying hens. And a laying hen is about 6 months old. They start laying at that age. And that's a really good age to try and get them right when they're just starting to lay. Get them settled in. It's going to take them a few days to a week to kind of like, whoa, this is a new home. Oh my God, I've got a new mama. Her name is Sarah. They got to adjust. And then they will start popping out about an egg a day.
So you have
And you
six
will.
eggs a day.
Pretty much. Now, they do take some, on average, a laying hen does about 250 eggs a year because they do take some time off if it gets too hot or too cold. And then every now and then they do this thing called molting, is where they drop their feathers and then they regrow them. But I mean, 250 eggs from six hens is going to be 1,500 eggs a year. And that means you have three egg omelets for breakfast every day of the year, and you have 33 dozen eggs to give away or trade or use in other recipes. And you basically have breakfast handled in 3 to 4 weeks.
Wow, and
That's
okay,
huge.
that is huge. But what about the cleaning out the coops, and is it a lot of work, or is it as long as they can get out of the they just go in the yard, or I mean, how much
You can,
effort
yeah,
is it to clean it?
You can let them run around the yard from time to time. You want to do that during the day because, everything loves chicken, predators especially. A lot of times, what I recommend is build the little coop for them, which is where they're going to live at night and where their feed stays dry and their water is. And then we build what we call a little run, which is an area that has access to the sun and wind and stuff. And that's their primary home. And yeah, you will have to, you're going to or droppings on the bottom in straw or hay or wood chips or whatever you have underneath their roost, because that's where the majority of their droppings are going to be. And you take that out every 2, 3 weeks, and basically you take it out with a pitchfork and you compost it, and that's fertility for your garden.
Oh wow. Okay.
So
So it's not that big of a deal. And then you get 6 eggs, you build a coop, you don't need that much space, right?
not really. It's
And
about the size of a parking spot would be for the coop and the run. And then,
do
yeah,
you
do let
need
them out every now and then into the yard, because then they'll run around and they'll catch bugs and they'll, eat a
they'll
little
eat
bit of fresh
worms and stuff,
greens.
right?
They'll
Don't
eat
they eat
worms
better if they
and
eat
stuff.
bugs?
Yeah.
And then
Absolutely.
yeah, they're healthier, right? If they do, or at least it's more protein if they have that. And then it's not that big of a deal. See, I was thinking it'd be a huge deal. I was all worried about it.
And I'd recommend getting six, and I'll tell you why. Chickens are flocking creatures, right? And flocking creatures, they know, chickens know that everybody loves to eat chicken, and they're terrified of old men with a white coat and a beard. Colonel Sanders, right? And so even if they live in a coop and run like that, they are very alert to what's going on in the world. And a lot of times in a flock, you'll see one of the hens, or if you have a rooster, he'll do the bulk of this job. But I don't recommend getting a rooster. By the way, they will lay eggs just fine without a rooster. But one of them will generally be up and looking around while her, sisters or friends are all got their head down pecking. And so they kind of rotate who's going to be kind of on guard duty and who isn't. And I don't know how they figure that out, but they do. So if you get six of them, then you kind of got like, well, 15% of the time you're doing guard duty, right? Well, if you have two of them, then it's kind of 50% of the time, right? And if you have one, the poor thing is neurotic. It's like they're flocking creatures and they like to be in a flock. It's a sense of security and health for them. And six is a good minimum at that. So,
Can you mix of
you can
ducks?
do.
Can you do like female ducks with female chickens, or do they you've got to do
Yeah,
them separate? You could.
you can. Yeah, you can. They generally do like to be separate because they do have very different habits. Like ducks really like to get in water, and they don't necessarily like to roost up high the way chickens do. I would recommend if you're going to do one or the other, start with one or the other. Ducks are also just as easy to get started as chickens, and it's almost the identical setup. Like
And the
basically, you
duck
said,
eggs, are they just as good as the chicken eggs in the
I
coop?
love them. Now, some people don't like duck eggs, but I really love them. I don't find
They're
any difference
bigger.
between them. They're bigger. And actually, there are breeds of ducks that are way more prolific egg layers than the chickens, even. Like you can get more than 250 a year, even 300, 325.
Wow.
So the ducks do eat a little bit more. But especially if you live in a wet climate, they love slugs and snails. And they'll be out there chomping down on that when you let them loose. And
And you don't
I
have to
had
feed
some
them as much
muscovies
then.
recently.
What do you do when it's really cold? Like I'm in a cold climate. What do you do when it gets, I'm in the Twin Cities, gets to 10 degrees below zero or something? Are you okay?
Yeah,
Like,
well, you're going to want to make sure that your house is really well insulated. And that's also why I really recommend ducks might be a better animal that far up north than chickens, just because they really are. Most ducks are much more adapted to colder weather. So, but yeah, make sure that your coop is pretty well insulated and that the roof is pretty well insulated. And but there's I was gosh, I was in Utah recently, and I mean, there's the chickens and the ducks out in the snow paddling around and doing their thing.
so they're fine in like 30 degree weather or 20 degree weather when there's snow. It's just when it gets really cold.
And you may want to do some extra protection if it's going to go way below zero. But again, ducks are going to be a little bit hardier. Also, the breed you choose, right? So the general guideline is I can give you some general guidelines. There's so many chicken breeds, it's almost overwhelming. But in the South, you're going to want a leaner, bird that's smaller. And then they have those fleshy bits on the top and underneath called the wattle and the comb. In the South, you want them to have big wattles and combs because they actually use those to dissipate heat. Mm. In the North, you want just the opposite. You want a little bit bigger birds that have a little bit bigger bodies and that have a lot more feathers and that they have very little wattles and combs, because those things, if they have a big one, then they can actually, you know, get frostbite and lose them, which is not fun for anybody. What breed you're gonna, and that, you know, that can kind of give you a rough idea, and just as you're looking at breeds, and then whoever you buy them from, you know, ask them. And I find that buying livestock from people is awesome. Like I was just buying some rabbits a few weeks ago on the side of the road at a flea market, and you know, the guy and I are changing numbers, and we're like, hey, you know, we'll stay in touch. And I actually think it's really great to go to their house to buy them if you can do something like that off of Craigslist. That way you can see how are these people doing this, how are they taking care of them, you know, like that. So
well, how about with like plants? What are the easiest plants to grow if you're a novice and it's hard to kill them and you get the, you know, really good results?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's
I'll give you with this, the simplest ever. Hold on one second. I'm going to grab a bit of, I drink these herbal infusions with just loaded with nutrients. This is like another super drink, but talking a lot, doing a lot of interviews.
Well, see, because I'm a type of person that would probably kill the plant. I mean, I'm like, I'm so bad.
I used to be something that just is easy. Yeah, I used to be that person. My first degree is in engineering, and then I went into finance. So it's not like there's a whole lot of hippie growing your own food in that background.
No.
This is what I recommend you do, is get a basil plant, a rosemary plant, and maybe some chives, and maybe a mint plant. All of those plants are super bulletproof. Find a window that's sunny. Hopefully it's by your sink or in your kitchen, because you want to be somewhere where you go often, right? So you're going to kill those plants if you put them in the spare bedroom, for sure. You're never going to see them.
Yeah, because you're not going to want to water them. Yeah.
Go put them somewhere where you're, or your office, you know, put them somewhere where you are regularly, that they have some access to sunlight. Put them in as big a pot as you can find. They're often called 1 gallon pots, and they're kind of big. And the reason why is the more soil you have in the pot, the more forgiving of your erratic watering schedule they will be, until you start to develop a rhythm of like, you know, every morning after I've done my meditation, I'm going to just go by and visit the plants and maybe check the soil. You've got a fabulous soil meter right here. You just stick that right into the soil about to the second knuckle. And if it feels nice and wet, you're good. And if it's dry, you're like, oh, maybe I should water the plants. But those four are bulletproof, and they'll grow really well for you. And it's just amazing what a little bit of chopped up fresh basil will do for a dish, right? It's just mind blowing to me how a small amount of fresh herb will drastically improve the flavor.
Taste.
You know, if you're cooking some pork chops, take a little bit of that rosemary and put it on the pork chop, completely enhances the taste. And there's a lot of nutritive value, and there's some medicinal value. There's some you know, a lot of these are what we call carminatives, which help you digest the food better. So there's, you know, there's a lot of value in growing herbs. And and you can grow them year round in that windowsill, right? You can grow them anytime. And the other thing is that everything you learn from those, say, three or four herbs in that windowsill directly translates to when you've got your little garden bed outside, or when you're managing acres of plants, because plants are going, you know, if you don't have enough sunlight, they get kind of pale and green, and we call it leggy. They start growing up and up because they're trying to find the sunlight. If they get too much sunlight for some of these plants, you'll start to see the leaves turn a little brown.
You start to figure it out,
right? If they don't get enough water, they droop and then they turn brown and die. All those reactions are the same for when you're in a garden or any other situation. In fact, you'll start noticing all your friends' plants and go, you need to water that, honey.
There,
but so, yeah. That's the way to get started is just do. I really recommend you. I can't tell you how many people, my videographer, one of the earliest people I worked with, her name was Maria. And we just got her set up with a few herbs in the windowsill. And then the next thing you know, she wanted the 4x4 square foot bed in the yard. And then that grew into a couple hundred square feet beds. And then she got the chickens, and then she did the rabbits, and then she got a goat. And, you know, now she's like totally producing all kinds of stuff. So,
and you know,
it's really easy.
You're going to be, if this world does what we think it, with the hyperinflation and with everything else, you're going to be really happy that you did this. I mean,
absolutely.
It's something that I just know my kids, I'm really proud of them. I'm looking at, I have a big window in front of me, and there's like literally 40 little plants of buds that they're growing to transplant into their garden. So in my family, I'm just not very good. I got it. But my kids are, somehow convince them, or somehow, you know, so it's good.
That's good. Yeah. Well, you get the chickens. Actually, tending the chickens is normally children's work in a family. And,
I should do the child's work.
there you go. But it really, and especially for kids, little kids, you know, Joel Salatin and I used to talk a lot about how to raise kids and start them out doing really meaningful work and providing part of the family's food supply by collecting the eggs and feeding the chickens and making sure the waterers are cleaned and topped off. That is vital important. That's vitally valuable work for a family, right? And that is, you know,
They can go to sarahsbackyardfarm.com. They can watch this wartime. Now, the wartime essential skill is going to be more than just this basic stuff we're talking about. You're going to be teaching people how to deal with grid down situations, how to deal with if we have some kind of border problem and the whole supply chain shuts down. I mean, kind of more serious issues.
Well, I focus on the basic home front skills. So growing food, preserving food, growing medicine. Foraging, how to start foraging, because there's free food all around you that you're completely ignoring right now. Building community, how to find like-minded neighbors without sacrificing OPSEC, operational security. AI and food. I got to interview one of the world's most knowledgeable AI experts, and we talk about how will that impact food and food production, and especially backyard food productions. Mm-hmm. His name is Dr. Kai Fu Lee. Very interesting comments about Elon Musk, which are worth watching for. Jeff Lawton, who is the world's premier permaculturist, and he does a property purchase checklist. And especially at the beginning of his presentation, he has some just random land, and he shows you with drawings of when he sees that land, what is he thinking that he would do to it to make it really, really productive with a very minimal amount of work. And then he takes you into his whole research center and shows you how he's actually implemented all that. Super amazing. Gotta tell you though, Jeff, I always want to get a comb and comb his hair. He's one of these wacko guys, but super smart and produces a huge amount of food with very little work. So that's the objective, right?
And that is the objective. I mean, honestly, because we're all so busy, but we have to realize that this will save you a lot of money. You don't have to work as much, I guess, if you're one of those people that work by the hour, right? Because it'll save you money buying food.
Yeah, well, the whole food supply is toxic. Everything. You know, we used to say, oh, be a perimeter shop. There's nothing in those, really, there's nothing in those vegetables or those fruits anymore. And God knows what they've sprayed them with. Even the organic stuff, they spray them with all kinds of stuff.
Well,
so
organic
really,
we're seeing a huge increase in heavy metals in the organic soils. What we have in general, but since 2019, it's just skyrocketed, aluminum especially.
All right. The chemtrails are that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. And these are the organic soils coming out of the reports that I have are coming out of this particular company does it for over about 4,500 organic farms. And they've been doing it for three decades. And that's their report. So they know how it's changed over time.
Oh my gosh. I'd love to get some of those from you. I got to let people know about that.
It's important.
Yeah, it really is. They are trying to kill you. Really,
I know.
There's like, I mean, we got to deal with that reality, which is kind of hard to take. But they're, you know, they put 10 million immigrants into the United States that are military-aged men. A lot of them are known criminals. What did they do that for?
Yeah, why would they, how could,
Why
that's a
would they
good
do that?
question. Why would they do that? And what kind of steward of this country are they if they're doing stuff like that? And because
Yeah.
it's so bad, it's so obvious that there's something wrong with them,
Yeah.
that's where you make these conclusions. It's like I've had Andy Shechtman on, and when it comes to the financial stuff,
Yeah.
we just went issue after issue. It's such a stupid thing that they're doing that the only conclusion that you can make is it's on purpose.
Exactly. It's the same thing with the food supply, with everything. You really
Yeah.
can't come to any other conclusion. The really great news is we have solutions for all of these things. We really do. For the financial system, we have
We
blockchain.
do.
For the food system, we can grow our own food. We have to completely redo the food system anyway. I mean, honestly, I have kind of a love-hate relationship with this whole thing. Like, I really think we should be shutting down all these
I know.
farms that are producing all this toxic stuff. It's just, I would have probably done it differently.
Well, their reset isn't our version of the reset. And now that they're doing it, well, then let's take advantage of it, but we got to get ahead of them.
You're absolutely right. And the early adopters have the advantage. So, right now you can go buy some laying hens and they'll be what? I don't know, $25 a hen. I don't know if you remember in 2020 when that whole pandemic thing unrolled, like you couldn't buy a laying hen, right? So go do it now, get that thing set up. And again, like what, a couple of weeks and you can have breakfast every day. And you'll have barter and trade items will be incredibly valuable, and that's just one. You'll get to go through the grocery store, and when you pass the egg section, you'll have your nose up in the
Oh, geez. You
There's
get to be
nothing.
arrogant because you got your own chickens.
There's
That's so
no
funny.
better feeling. I'm telling you.
Okay. Okay, so again, sarahsbackyardfarm.com, and that, when is that airing?
It's airing April 27th and 28th. So go sign up now, and I promise you we'll send you reminders. I always need a gazillion reminders, but it's all free and we're just doing it. We also have another one on roadkill, and which is kind of, like if you don't want to do that one right now, that's fine. But there is a skill of judging the edibility of found meat, right? That meat on the road is likely free range organic, right? Meat,
That's probably
right?
right, yeah.
And there are, did they pull the hair? Is it bloating, rigor mortis? How do you know? And there are very clear steps and indications to know if that meat is healthy or not. We also go into home butchering on that one too, which is a skill that every adult used to have. And I used to say it's a skill every adult used to have, like tying their shoes, but now people don't even know how to tie their shoes anymore. So
Yeah, that's true. They do slip on shoes. I have to admit, I don't like to wear tight shoes. I like to slip on shoes because I got comfortable slip on shoes. You
I've
don't
got to go right. I totally get it.
have
Velcro. I've got Velcro sandals. I'm totally in love with them. Yeah.
That's so funny.
And we also have a really fabulous presentation on growing tomatoes because I consider tomatoes a survival food. I mean, with tomatoes, you can have Mexican, you can have Italian, all the
Pasta.
different
Yeah.
pasta, Thai, everybody uses tomatoes. And it's just a fantastic thing. And canning tomatoes is one of the very first projects that you can do that you'll have a lot of success with. So tomatoes are just such a great crop to grow. So really, these skills are put together to prepare you as much as possible to hopefully it inspires you, because this stuff, I tell you, this stuff really is simple, right? It really is, because being for almost all of your lineage and your history, your grandparents, great grand, all the way back did this. And a lot of them couldn't read, and none of them had Google. And none of them had a Cuisinart either. So, most of it
That's
was just a
right.
chopping board and a knife. Like, so this stuff really is very simple. In fact, all of the heirloom genetics we have were developed by your ancestors at one time or another. So, it's also something that is in your genes. Like, you know how to do this at some fundamental level, and you're good at it, right? It's actually been programmed out of us for like the last couple of generations, but I don't think they can wipe that out. I mean,
Well, I remember
throughout
growing
human
up,
history,
yeah, go ahead.
No, go
I was
growing
gonna say, I
up.
remember growing up, my mom always had a garden and she was canning everything, and my job was to go flip and weed the garden. I hated it, but I did
But you
it. You
did
know?
it, yeah.
Yeah. And she had she'd make pickles. That's when I really started liking pickles. So she had carrots and cucumbers and tomatoes and all sorts of stuff.
And for those of you that are older that are listening to this, who have grandchildren, I've interviewed a ton of baby boomers and I asked them what is their favorite memories of their grandparents. And it was never, oh, they took me to the skating rink or they took me to a movie or we went to a museum. It was always, well, I collected eggs with grandpa or, I dug potatoes with grandma. Or in my case, it was my Aunt Julia. We made applesauce from the apple tree she had in her front yard. It always involved food production or food processing, is that's what's truly, truly, truly meaningful. So, start doing this and then working with your grandkids and that will be what they remember. They don't know you just learned this last week.
They don't know you just, they don't know you no, barely no more than them.
I just saw Marjorie do this and she said that and then they don't need to know that. You could just go ahead and do that. But
don't know. They think you're the expert.
They'll remember you for that. Honestly, that'll be some of their fondest memories. Because who doesn't love being outside and sunshine and fresh air and dirt and getting to play with dirt and water? Like, oh my God, how fun is
That's
that?
true. Well, this is awesome. People need to do this. I think this is, that's why I keep sharing your stuff over and over and over again, because it's free.
I see that. Thank you. Yeah, I see it in your email news. I by the way, I am subscribed and I love all your interviews. It's just so hard to keep up with everything, and you're doing such a good job of presenting like what's forefront and what's
It's
needed to
hard.
know. Yeah.
It's hard and
Yeah.
hard to weed out what's needed to know versus just noise. You know,
Right.
that's what I'm trying to do because there's so much noise out there. And so what is it that is relevant and what is just noise? And I'm not giving everybody everything that's relevant because there's too much of it, but doing the best I can to
Exactly.
get the heavy hitters. Yeah. And
Yeah.
so thank you for that. And I know you're doing that as well. So I'm just, getting people the best information possible, and you're a big part of that. So I appreciate that more than you know. And I
Thank you.
just, yeah, I it's so great. I think what I'm going to do is show people I'm not lying, that I'm kind of inept and my kids are doing stuff. I'll do a little video and they can see all the little plants that are sitting there. They really do have all these. I'm not making it up, which is so cool when my kids are doing that, because this is,
Is, yeah. Well,
yeah.
here's an inspirational thing. So on the Robert Scott Bell show, I've been doing his show for years, and Super Don is his producer. And Super Don made this comment of like, Marjorie has this webinar about how to grow food if you're old, you're out of shape, you like eating Doritos. And I think she was targeting me. Because, he's kind of a big boy, right? You can tell he likes sitting in his chair managing his productions. And he's been gardening now for a couple of years and producing some stuff. And I think he's upping up to chickens next. So, this is totally do. Of course, Robert's been doing it for a long time, but
Sure.
if Super Don can do it, anybody can do
Well, I'm just
it.
surprised that you said that chickens are, because I that would that's anti that's counterintuitive to me because of what I've read. And now you're kind of motivating me a little bit, because we've been talking about chickens for years, wanting to do it, but we're like, oh, I don't know. And then we read it and we get scared off. But Marjorie's telling
No,
us to
really.
do this. Yeah.
Yeah, just build a coop and run and pick up some chickens. Make sure you have the water and feed first. I have often done that, like been somewhere and impulse buy livestock and not have the facilities for them. That's
Well,
really
but does the
dumb. Don't
water
do
have to be
that.
automated, or just, what do you mean by the water? Does it, you just, if you have like a hose, I mean, how sophisticated does the water have to be?
Oh, the water could be just simple. If you just have a hose and a little bucket and you just
Okay.
splash some water in there every day. I actually there are plans for, and I can send this to you, an ebook I wrote a while ago where you take a 5 gallon bucket, get the kids to do this some weekend. You take a 5 gallon bucket and you have it go to a little float valve that sits in a trough, and then all you have to do is fill up that 5 gallon bucket once every 2 weeks or something like
Oh,
that, and
that's
then
way better.
that whole, yeah, way better. And it's such a great All this stuff, by the way, is so great for kids. Like, you learn so much just doing that, because it's real world and it's practical. And like, water does, it's gravity, you know. This is a float valve. When it goes up, it shuts off and on. And you know, the kids have such a great time with that. And then so super easy to build. I mean, it just, if you just want to put a bucket in there and then splash some water in it, then that's good enough to go from day one. And then say, well, I'll build that off-grid water next after that. But it really, in a couple of weeks, you can totally be having breakfast every morning,
That's
you
incredible. And
know?
it tastes better, I think. That's what I've been hearing too, is
Oh,
just
yeah.
tastes better. Well, Marjorie, thank you so much for joining the program. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to be here. I want us to win. I really see such a bright, I'm just so excited about a future where humanity is not utterly controlled and manipulated, and almost everything that they've done to us for millennium has been to try and reduce our intelligence or our motivation. You know, the school system is designed to turn out little automaton consumers, factory workers, right? You know, like, we're at this inflection point. We could totally win this thing and completely, you know, have humanity that's free and liberated and able. Like, we can redo the food systems that actually make you healthy and strong, and the financial system that's actually fair and doesn't bleed you to death, and governments that are honest. You know, if we, I don't even think we need government, honestly, but
Well, a lot less of it for sure.
you know, healthcare systems that are designed to really help you be healthy instead of trying to extract every last penny
That's
out of you.
right. That's right.
So I really believe, but honestly, if you aren't able to eat every day, then you will go to that FEMA camp eventually, or you'll submit to that shot, or you'll take those CBDCs or
That's right.
whatever.
That's right. Well, I'm just worried that everybody will want to take the CBDCs except just the real people, you know, the real out there, the real committed people, if they get their way. And that's why we have to fight to win. I said we need to fight to win this thing. And at zero acceptance of CBDC, we cannot have that, because then I just think too many people will take it. I really do. And so we have to. I know that's another conversation for another time that we
That
can
is
have.
another, but that's also apparently part of their plan, is just
I
make you
know.
so friggin' desperate. But
I
I'm
know.
saying, look, you can grow your own food, you
Me.
can make your own medicine. There's ways we can have our own energy. We're starting to figure out ways to be connected
That's
without,
right.
you know, the internet kill switch. I saw that on your interview. I mean, we have solutions to this. We just need to be proactive and do it. And food supply is number one, but I will tell you, Sarah, I think I've told this story before. Like, I got into this out of fear and panic like 20 years ago. And I will say that was the best thing that ever happened to me, because growing my own food has been the most wonderful activity and grounding, and
Empowering.
it's just empowering. I know, and it's so simple and so humble, and it's so wonderful. You're gonna love it. Wait till you, I wanna come on the show in another month, and you're gonna have your chicken stories, and it's gonna be great.
I have to convince my husband first. That's an uphill climb, but we'll see. I'm going to try. Okay, Marjorie, thank you so much.
All righty, Sarah, we'll talk to you later.